we're so great, so grateful that you're here. I'm so glad that you're here to worship with us. Today, we actually begin a three-part sermon series called The Battle Plan. And we're just going to go straight into it. The reason why we call this The Battle Plan, it's not an exaggeration to say that the church is in a warfare. It's in a battle, a spiritual warfare. Every single week, every single day, we're fighting a spiritual battle. And as a church, we are winning people for Christ. And so at this point in our battle, so to speak, the pastoral team felt that there's a need to provide an update about where we are in this battle and that we should outline our plan going forward, especially the coming few months. Now, the reason why we have to especially take out this time to tell you about this, is some of you may already know this. We have been in a particularly challenging situation for the past few months, and we foresee that the next few months is not going to really get any easier. Just a little recap. If you were with us in July, you may remember that one of our pastoral staff resigned. And in the middle of August, just a month later, one of our lead pastors, Pastor Joshua, he was injured in a bike accident and he was not able to do work. And then fast forward to now, in another month or so, Pastor Fizz, who is my wife, where's Pastor Fizz? Pastor Fizz is, Pastor Fizz. She's my wife. She's going to begin her maternity leave, which also means I'm going to go on my parental leave for, you know, short period of time. So in a month's time in November, we are going to go from having four pastors in the summer to having only Pastor Gabriel. And I'm not going to be gone for like a year. I will return shortly, but I fully expect that when I return, I'm going to be here in body, but my soul and spirit is going to be on the bed because I'm going to try to catch up with all the sleep. So given that we were already short-staffed, we are still hiring at least three staff positions before any of this happened. You can imagine it's going to be a significant challenge going forward. Now, the positive outlook of all of this is that the church is indeed growing. We have new guests coming. You guys are bringing new friends. You guys are coming and joining small group. But that means that there's more work, there's more need, there's more roles to fill, and there's more things to do. Church growth is a positive thing. But now, in this time, it's an added layer of challenge. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. No matter what angle you look at it, what's in front of me and you and the church as a whole, this coming period is very much like a challenge, very much like a trial or maybe even a test of some sort. And that's the premise we are talking about when we begin our sermon series. We're going to talk about three challenges that we're going to face, and we're going to talk about how to overcome them. And just right off the bat, I want to lay out sort of like a foundational theme, like a unifying thought, an overarching strategy, you know, for this battle, if you will. The pastoral team fully believe that we need to have a mindset, the mindset to see every moment of challenge as opportunity for breakthrough, to see moment of trial as an opportunity for growth. And this is on a church level, but also on a personal level. And I'll explain why in a second. We are all bought into this as a staff team. And we truly believe that when we adopt this mindset, we can overcome this coming situation and we'll come out of this stronger and better as a church. So what are these challenges and how do we turn them into opportunities? We're going to talk about the first one today. The first challenge that we're going to face in this season is pretty obvious. It's very simply this. There's not enough soldiers to fight the battle. There's not enough people to fight the battle. The pastoral staff that left in July, half of her responsibilities was to preach in the English service and also prepare for young adults all costs and lead the small group. These work still need to be done, even when she's gone. Pastor Fizz oversees the English service with the staff team. She works with the guest team. She oversees the high school ministry, develops curriculum for high school students, meet with the high school students, host the service for us. These works still need to be done. I work in the English service. I'm here. I work with the production team. I lead music. I preach. I lead the young adults. All costs. These things still need to be done. We're not going to just shut the service for, you know, 2 months until I'm back. Pastor Gabriel, as faithful as he is, he cannot preach for 6 weeks in a row and then lead worship and then oversee the guest team and then lead high school oikos and young adults oikos and meet with you guys and host the service. We're not putting that burden on him. That's not happening. So that means in essentially every ministry area in the English service, there is a hole, there's needs, there's positions to fill. There's not enough soldiers to fight the battle. There's not enough people to fight the battle. That is the challenge that we're facing right now. Now, we have a few solutions to this challenge. The first solution is to hire. Hire people to cover for our responsibilities. But you may have already known this. There are no suitable candidates that have applied to our positions. Well, solution number two is to well prioritize important ministries only and reduce all the other nice-to-have projects, which in fact we are already doing. We are already operating on important ministries only. And everything that I just told you and I outlined about our work and our responsibilities, those things are essential, our core ministries. So that leaves us with solution number three. Divide up the work, spread it across the congregation, and ask you guys to step in and to step up. To step in and to step up. That, in fact, is already something that we have begun to do in our young adults, all cause, in our small group, and in our high school students. In the past few months, we've been talking to them. We're asking, hey, you're already serving. You're doing great at this position. Can you do something a little bit higher up, so to speak? Can you take on a little bit more responsibilities? Can you do a little bit more things that are a little bit more sophisticated? We also approach a bunch of high school students. Hey, you've been really committed to the small group. You've been doing really well in the discussion. Can you lead some activities? We have been asking our current small group members to step in and to step up. And right now, I want to repeat the invitation to all of you. If you are already serving, would you consider stepping up, doing a little bit more, doing a little bit more difficult things, doing a little bit sort of so-called higher level things, taking on a little bit more responsibilities. For example, if you have been, you know, as a setup role in the production team, say, can you go from setup to maybe like the presentation role? If you're on a site team setting up, can you go from, you know, just setting up the site and to overseeing the site team? Maybe like you've been a really committed member in your small group. Can you say, hey, I can help lead some activities. I can help lead some games. And maybe you're already leading some activities. Why don't you try leading some discussions? Why don't you try leading the small group? Step up and offer help to your leader. Offer help to your supervising staff. If you're available to step up, and if you would like to, you can let your leaders know, let your supervising staff know right after this service. Now, the second thing is to step in. If you are not already serving, this is a call for you to step in and to serve. Because when your brothers and your sisters and the congregation, they are stepping up, we need people to step in to cover for them. And there are positions that you already know, and we talk about this, you know, every single time. There is a site team that comes to serve. They set up the room, set up the venue, put up the chairs. You know, chairs don't walk out by themselves. You know, this is the most straightforward team to begin. You come in an hour earlier, and there's nothing to do after the service. Second team you can consider is the production team. They set up the equipment, they set up the lights, the audio system. This team is a little bit more sophisticated in terms of the things that they do. They also come just an hour earlier at 5 p.m. Now, this team has some sort of more higher stakes position, if you will, like the presentation role and the audio role. They are more visible, they are more important in a sense that they affect the service in real time. Or if you play instruments, if you sing, and if you can come to practice on the weekday, on Monday, you can consider joining the music team. We're always in need of people to serve in the music team to lead worship together. Guest team, you know, you've met some people with the yellow tags. They welcome you in. This team, I just want to highlight, this team is in real shortage going into January. If you care for people coming in, if you care about your friends coming in, if you want people to feel welcome, to be known, if you want people to come in and they don't feel like a loner, you join guest team. That will be your team. Your heart says, I want to make sure people are connected, people are welcomed in here. You join the guest team. Lastly, there's the food team. If you can drive, you can pick up food. If you don't mind to stay after service to clean up, clean some of the dishes that our high school students are having, you know, after their dinner, consider joining the food team. If you are available to step in to serve, talk to any of our staffs. There are a couple of QR codes in the back that has a form that points you to a sign up to serve form. But best yet, if you have any questions, sometimes we have this, we have questions and we rather not, and if we haven't figured out all of our questions yet, then we don't serve. Better to just talk to us first. Perhaps the questions that you have is something that we already thought about and we can address your situation. And that's the plan. That's the strategy going forward. We must adopt that strategy. All of us must step up and step in for this ministry to go forward. We are down three staffs in the coming months. We must everybody to step in and to step up. Now, while this may sound like a lot of a negative thing, this is an opportunity. It's actually a good thing. The opportunity to step up and to step in is an opportunity to grow. Not just for the church, but for you. This is a good thing for you, especially if currently right now you're on the outside looking in. We really want you to take hold of this opportunity. And when I word it like this, you may be a little bit skeptical. How is this a good thing? There's a lot more work for me to do. You're asking me to do things, to come in earlier. You're just tricking me to doing your work. But maybe for some other people, you're genuinely unsure. You're afraid. You have to wait a little bit about this church. You have to see a little bit more about this faith. How is this a good thing? How is stepping up and stepping in a good thing? How is this an opportunity? Let me try to explain this with a story. A what-if story, if you will. This what-if story is found in the Gospel of Luke. Luke's account of Jesus' life. And this is very early on in the beginning of Jesus' ministry. It reads like this. On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on Jesus to hear the word of God, Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. Now, Jesus saw two boats. He's thinking that he's going to go on the two boats to preach from the boat so he won't get pushed into the lake. And so he looked around. He found the fisherman that owns the boat. And these fishermen are on the side of the crowd. They were washing their nets. Why are they washing their nets? Because they just finished their work. They finished their long night of work. Now it's early morning. They just finished everything, and they're getting ready to pack and go home. Now, the text doesn't say whether Jesus just stepped onto the boat and hijacked the boat, or he just, just went on the boat without permission. But being the gracious Son of God that he is, I imagine that he asked. He called out to one of the owner of the boat. Simon, could you lend me a hand? Now, he knows Simon. Simon is Jewish. Simon was brought up in the Jewish faith. He believes in his young age. Simon has been following him around. Simon has been listening to his teaching. And in fact, Jesus has visited Simon's home and healed Simon's mother-in-law. Simon, I know you just finished work. You're probably pretty tired. You might have plans later with your family, but I need help. Can I take a little bit of your time? Can you actually come over here and put out your boat a little with me so I can preach to the people? Can you imagine this? The Son of God asking for a favor. Remember, this is the Son of God that later is going to walk on water. He could have just walked out, but he chose to ask Simon. And so we have the first what-if moment in this story. What if Simon said, you know what, teacher, I would love to help, but I'm actually quite busy later. I got plans with my wife and John and my homies are going to go for lunch later. I'm not going to stick around. In fact, I had a long day from work. We went out all night trying to catch fish. We are pretty tired. It's been a long night. In fact, my whole week has been pretty bad. I'm just going to take it easy. John is real helpful. He also has a boat. Why don't you ask John? Or maybe he's like, teacher, let me pray about it. I'll get back to you next week. What if that's what Simon says? Well, I think if that's what Simon says, you actually won't read about Simon for the rest of the book. He remains to be a first century ordinary fisherman, minding his own business. He and Jesus actually crossed paths, but they just missed each other. Now, the other side of the question is, well, what if Simon says yes? He hears Jesus calling out to him, and he's like mending the net and cleaning all the junk that's caught in the net. He's thinking, he did heal my mother-in-law. I'm going to have to call my wife, cancel the lunch plans, reschedule it to dinner. You know, I'm pretty tired right now, but maybe if this teacher doesn't talk for too long, you know, I can just go home and sleep earlier, get some rest tonight. Okay, teacher, I'm coming. That what-if moment seemed so trivial now that you look at it. But in fact, it would turn out to be a life-changing event. And so Simon, he went and helped Jesus onto the boat. He put the boat out just a little bit out of the land, and Simon grabbed a little stool, and Jesus sat on it and started to preach. And as usual, Jesus talked for a long time, and Peter was falling asleep, and he woke up just in time for the, you know, the prayer ending and the benediction. He just woke up, and when Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. Let's go fishing." To which Simon says, "Wait, what? Is this a, it's been a long night, I was kind of sleeping. Is this a sermon illustration? Like, I thought you were done." And I imagine Jesus smiles and he says, "No, Simon, get your friends over, let's go fishing." That's another what if moment. A seemingly very trivial request. It's a very inconvenient one at best. It's even a very strange one. Because think about it. If you were Simon, you might say, "Well, teacher, you are a carpenter that happens to teach very well. You know who I am? I'm a fisherman that happens to fish very well. I know my stuff. You don't know my stuff. In our business, we fish at night. You know why you fish at night? Because the water's cold and the fish is more active and they come up to the surface. I mean, like, you preach for like 2 hours and it's almost noontime. By the time we get our nets and then get the gear back, get everybody ready, it's going to be like middle of the day. Nobody fishes at this time because no fish is there. Look, teacher, I have a dinner. I actually like reschedule my lunch to be a dinner with my wife. Like, if we go now, I got to wash my nets and do all of this stuff. I'm going to miss my dinner. And my whole routine and my whole sleeping schedule and my whole lifestyle is just going to get messed up. And all of that for an empty trip. In fact, your sermon today was great. It was insightful. I'll catch you next week." What if that's what Simon says? I think then you won't hear about Simon for the rest of the book. He goes back and continues his life to be an ordinary first century fisherman, grateful to have met a man who healed his mother-in-law. But listen to what Simon says. Simon answered, "Master, we toiled all night and took nothing." You can hear a little bit of his like fisherman pride and like reluctance. Like, we did this for all night and we did nothing. "But at your word, because you say so, I will do it." It's inconvenient. It's tiring. It's a lot of work. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But because you say so, I'll do it. And so Simon called his homies over. "Hey, we're going to go fishing." To which they said, "What? Yeah, we're going to fishing. The teacher wants a lake tour. But we just like clean up everything and packed everything. We're just about to go home. Hey, he healed my mother-in-law. I owe him one. Let's do this just once. I owe you dinner tomorrow." So they grabbed their massive nets. They hauled everything back to the boats. And then they got the two boats together and then pushed it off. And everybody's watching, you know, all of their competitors, all their business, you know, people that fish. They're just watching. What are these guys doing? You're fishing. It's like 12 p.m. And so Simon and his friends and John, and they went to the middle of the sea and they let down the nets and they waited and they waited. And they waited. After like 5 minutes or so, Simon thought to himself, "Well, this is awkward. Should we head back?" Jesus is still sitting on the stool. He's just chilling. He's just looking, enjoying the view, having a tour, and he smiles and says, "Okay, sure, let's go back." And so the people grabbed the nets and started to take them back. But the moment they held onto their nets, the nets pulled down on them, and their boat was sinking. Their nets were breaking. They called to John, the other ship, and they'd come to help. They got the boats together, and both of the boats started to sink because their nets were filled with all the fish. When Simon saw this, everything clicked for him. He ran to Jesus, and he whipped out his business proposal from his jacket. "Boss, let's partner together, 50-50 split. With your power and my expertise, we can dominate the fishing business. We're going to start a company, and we can retire in 5 years." No, that's not what he said. Simon saw all of this. He's a fisherman. He knows what's going on. This is not chance. This is not nature. That's not normal. This is supernatural. This is a miracle. the man on the boat is not just a carpenter. He's not just a teacher. He has control over nature and creation itself. He is a divine being. So Simon fell down on Jesus' knees and he cried out, "Go away from me, for I am a sinful man." And I think Jesus smiled to him, reached out to his shoulders and said to him, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be catching men." And that is the last what if moment in this story. What Jesus says here is an implicit invitation. Simon, you have been a fisherman for as long as you've been alive. It's your comfort zone. It's your safety net. But today, would you put down your net and follow me? Reprioritize your life. Reprioritize your value. Follow me. And in that moment, if Simon says no, to our teacher, what you did there is great. I don't know how you did it, but it was like amazing. I actually don't think I'm ready yet. I need some time to talk to my wife, discuss with my boss, to get rid of all this fishing. I just need to pray about it. Can I pray about it? Can I come back next week? What if Simon says no? He remains to be an ordinary first century fisherman. And we would not be reading this today. Obviously, that's not what he said. When they got back their boats to the land, Simon and the people, they left everything and they followed him. So these three what-if moments in this story is Jesus' invitation to Simon. And honestly, some of them, it's pretty trivial. It's pretty pretty small and strange of a request. It's like the first one is like, "Can you give me a hand? Simon, can you give me a hand? Can I use your boat? Can I take up a little of your time? Can you do something that doesn't make sense to you? That would sound a little bit odd and maybe a little strange, and your friends and your peers will laugh at you. Can you go out, get the boat out, and put the net down?" The last one, perhaps, is the most challenging. Can you put down your lifestyle and what you're used to and your comfort zone? Can you come out here, step out here, and follow me? What if Simon said no to any of this? Well, I don't think much will happen, because Simon will continue to be a first century ordinary fisherman. Jesus will continue his ministry. He is going to continue to do miracles and die on the cross and resurrect and build his church. We will probably still be here, just not talking about Simon. Now, bring the story back to you. What if you said no? I'm guessing that most of us sitting here are second generation Christians. Your faith has been passed down to you. You have heard about God since you were in your mother's womb, and you were singing, hill songs when you were before you even spoke anything. Your faith was passed down to you, and so for this whole time, you've been hearing stuff, hearing about how good, God would do things and how God built the church, and but you haven't experienced much yourself. In fact, you're skeptical. Your faith got challenged in university, at the high school, and all this kind of stuff going on in the world, and you have questions that are unanswered. And so you come here regularly, but it's more like a routine for you. It's a habit. It's a place that's kind of cool. I kind of like it here. And here we are in October, November of 2024, and we're saying, "Could you give us a hand? Can I take a little bit of your time? Can you step in to help? I mean, it's inconvenient. It's a little strange request for you to come early to set up the chairs. That's not what you do. Your expertise is much more honorable than this. Can we use your boat? Can you let down your nets?" And I think you have a what-if story that's waiting to be written. Because what if you said no? I mean, nothing will happen, probably. Hopefully you continue to come back. But I'm guessing that you will continue to hear stuff about the faith, but maybe nothing will change. The questions you've had about the faith will continue to be unanswered. The experience you have with the faith probably won't change. And you can come for another 5 years, come for another 10 years, you will probably remain to be the same first century ordinary fisherman. Nothing wrong with being a fisherman, but nothing will happen to this fisherman. So let's ask the other side of the question. What if you said yes to that seemingly like very strange and trivial and inconvenient request? Let me show you what happened to Simon. What happened after his yes. And this is not a complete summary. If we did it, you're going to be here for 2 hours. Simon, after that day, dropped everything and would follow Jesus around in his ministries, and he would eventually become one of his closest followers, one of the 12 disciples. And he would go from hearing about God's work to watching God work. He would go from a miracle hearer to become a miracle watcher. He saw with his own eyes how Jesus healed the blind, healed the sick, healed the lame, and raised the dead people back to life. And he saw with his own eyes Jesus walking on water towards him. And in fact, he would be the same person that walked out on the water to meet him. And he saw Jesus calm the storm, the rain and the waves and the wind obey his voice. And in this journey, he would actually find his vocation. He would actually find his calling, his purpose. Because in the middle of this journey, Jesus would give him a new name. You're not to be called Simon anymore. Your name is Peter, meaning the rock. And what that means is, Peter, you have a mission to your life. You have a purpose to your life. You're not just an ordinary fisherman anymore. You are Peter, and I am going to build the church on you. The first century church is going to be built on your foundation and what you do. And so Peter actually received his purpose and his calling after he said yes. But before that, Jesus says you would have to go through a transformation. Because Peter had a lot of fear, Peter had a lot of pride, Peter was a little arrogant, Peter was a little too fast to do everything. And so in his fear and in his pride, Peter denied Jesus 3 times before the cross. And he saw with his own eyes Jesus crucified, but he met with his own eyes and he touched him and he talked with him, the resurrected Jesus. And Jesus restored Peter 3 times. You're the rock, build the church. Feed my sheep, be a pastor. And afterwards, Jesus ascended up to heaven. The apostles received the great commission, you know, to bring the gospel to the nation. And Peter would then live out his calling, his purpose, and his vocation. He would now go from watching Jesus do miracles to doing miracles himself. When Christ healed the blind man, you know, healed the sick, cast out demons, he would do the same thing. In fact, he would even raise the dead. And he would actually fulfill his calling as a rock. He would lay the foundation for the first century church by assembling the leaders and preaching to the Gentiles. And what's so interesting is at the end of his life, he would write 2 letters as a pastor. And he starts off by saying, "I am Peter. Not Simon, not the fisherman. I'm Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ." And in those letters, he would strengthen the believers just like how Jesus strengthened him. He would live out his calling all the way to the day he died. All of this because he lent Jesus a hand. Because Jesus asked him, "Could I use your boat? You want to put down the net?" And Peter stepped in when there was a need, and he continued to step out of his comfort zone throughout this whole journey, and he finally stepped up to be the leader of the first century church. That what-if moment by the lake was the first of the chain of life-changing and life-altering events that changed Simon to Peter. That changed the miracle hearer to a watcher, to a miracle worker. From a person that just heard about God to a person that worked with God. From a person that was an ordinary fisherman to a fisher of men. from a person that would have disappeared in the pages of history to the apostle of Jesus Christ. All because of the boat. Could I use your boat? Could you lend a hand? Can I take a little bit of your time? And Peter says, because you say so, I'll do it. And that's the challenge that we have right now. But that challenge is an opportunity for you to grow. The need for us to step up and to step in is an opportunity for you to grow, for you to experience God as and his miracle and his power, to go from just hearing about things, you've heard a lot since you were born, to watching God work and to working with him. And in fact, this is an opportunity for you to grow your knowledge of your calling, your purpose, that you're not just a fisherman, you're not just a nobody. So at this time, the question then is, what is your next step? And what if you said yes? Allow me to be so bold to paint a picture of what I think might happen to your what if story if you said yes. Because say, what if serving was your lend me your boat moment? What if joining the serving team, I mean, it's going to take your time, it's going to be inconvenient. You might look a little funny to your friends. But what if that's your first step in your faith journey and your life will begin to change? Because what if that serving leads you to join small group? And joining small group is then where you watch God at work. You've heard about your parents talk about prayers being answered, and now you're in the group where people prayed for sickness, where people prayed for their mothers and their fathers, and you say, wow, God actually listens? What if in that small group, you've never thought that a Bible would be relevant to anybody? You thought that was an outdated book. But now in the small group, you hear people say, wait, God spoke to me. That was for me. And then what if your small group brings you to a place where you're leading other people in small group, leading those much younger than you, and God is working through you to change the people, to pray for the people? What if then you lead a retreat with them and you see the Holy Spirit working and people are just crying in worship, not because they're so sad, but because God spoke to them and God touched them, and you don't understand any of it, but you know God is working. And what if all of these brought you to a point where you realize what God has made you to do? That, come on, your life is much more than just being an ordinary first century fisherman. You're not just another Simon. Your life is much more than going to school, finish school, and then get a job and go to work every single day, and then go to church once a week. Your life is much more important than that. Much more valuable. You know this. That's why you're here. You think that there is much more to this life than just working and being a fisherman. That's why you're here. And I want to tell you, what if your yes brought you to your purpose, to your calling? What if the result of you saying yes is you realize, wow, when people say God is good, he's actually pretty good. When people say God answers prayer, he actually answers prayer, and he listens to me. What if stepping out means you realize what your strengths are, how God has made you uniquely, and you have a purpose and you have a calling? I don't know. Maybe God is saying to some of us today, you've been here a couple of weeks now. Could I use your boat? Can I take a little of your time? Could you give me a hand? Maybe some of you, he's telling you, hey, can you do something that on the outside doesn't make any sense? Can you put down the nets? Or maybe there's a third group of people. I don't know. Maybe he's telling you, hey, you've been a fisherman for a long time now. You've been a fisherman for a long time now. Would you put down your lifestyle as a fisherman? Follow me, and I'll make you a fisher of men. What if you said yes? Let's pray together. God, I'd like to pray for those that are that have already stepped out, stepped in serving. God, my prayer for them is that you will reveal to them how you've called them. You will reveal to them their purpose. You will reveal to them their calling. You would reveal to them the reason why they exist. God, I pray that in their serving, in their journey of following you, you would reveal to them how they are uniquely made, how they have been set apart for you, that they would know their gifts and ultimately the reason for their existence and what you have made them for. God, I bless them that in this journey of stepping in and stepping out and serving you, that they would grow in their knowledge of vocation and calling and why you have chosen them to not just be a fisherman, but be much more than that. God, I pray for those of us in here that have not yet stepped in to the church, that have not yet plugged into the church. I pray for them that there's this word that's out there in the slang language, FOMO, the fear of missing out. God, I pray that they will have a holy fear of missing out. That they don't want to miss out on what you're doing. They don't want to miss out on what you can do through them. That they don't want to miss out and waste their life. God, pray for them. I pray for them that they have courage to step out, to step in. And I bless them that they can experience your work and that they can see you at work. I pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.